This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender community. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. This is Jack Valinsky with Queer Voices.
This is Deborah Bell.
And Eddie Doyle.
And this is the Monday, April the 3rd edition of Queer Voices.
And this evening, we are going to be talking to a number of people. We've got a pretty good show tonight, I think. Of course, that's up to the audience to decide. David Elliott's calling in from Washington to sort of give us the monthly report on Inside the Beltway. And I understand he's going to be talking about immigration, which is a good topic.
Hot topic.
Yes. And then we are going to be talking with the candidate running for the Democratic nominee for the Senate seat, which is Barbara Ann Ranofsky. She'll be calling in at 7:35, almost exactly, if we're right. We're going to be doing some community talking and events like that, but then also...
Well, we're going to talk to Jack Valinsky, Executive Director of Pride Houston, about the developments for 2006 Pride Celebration, Say It Out Loud. And we're also going to feature special the music of Gretchen Phillips, who will be in Houston this Friday, April the 7th.
Anything else?
That's about it.
Okay. Sounds like we have a good show tonight.
There was one more thing. Marianne Coleman will be joining us to talk about the Kindred Spirits Reunion Dance.
Well, that's fabulous. And that's been, I think it's been going on for a number of years.
Did you do this last year?
Yeah.
It's an annual event. That's what happens.
I got it.
It's like your birthday. It happens every year.
Well, you know, if we were really good, we would just pull it out of the can and replay some of these
things. That's right.
No.
We could do that.
No, but it does change every year. And just like, well, we were hoping also have the bunnies on because a week from Sunday is the bunny party.
The bunnies being the bunnies on the bayou, which is a fundraiser for several different organizations and always takes place on, guess what, Easter Sunday.
Which, well, hopefully the weather's going to be really nice then. And the day before that is the jungle party. And that's also an organization that raises money for many organizations.
They both do a great job.
Yes, they do. I mean, they have really wonderful parties. And although I've never went to jungle, but it's not exactly
my day.
Yes, I heard about it. But they basically, all the proceeds on the day of the event goes for fundraising, which is really great.
Right. And you know what happens Monday following all that? That's the day our income tax will be due because since Saturday the 15th is on a Saturday, we have a couple of, you know, a little bit extra time there to get the income tax return in.
Talking about the
so that we can keep JD busy.
Well, you know, and I haven't discussed this before, but before we get into our show, I was thinking about doing some interviews on sort of how nonprofits run. And I think we definitely have the talent within the community. And certainly, Deborah, you've worked in nonprofits before, and I work at a nonprofit.
And it's usually for our nonprofit.
Yes.
The nonprofit of ourselves.
So maybe we can, do some interviews, like on how to find volunteers, you know, how to find board members. Of course, I'm still trying to figure out a lot of these things, too, because it's a new challenge all the time.
That's right.
With us on the line is David Elliott. How are you doing this evening, David?
Well, good evening, Jack. I am well. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. But how are things going up in Washington?
Well, you know, it's a big week up here, Jack, and there's a really important issue that's important both to the United States and in particular to your listeners in Houston, and I'd like to discuss that issue with you, if I may.
Okay.
You know, Jack, in our daily routine, as we go through the things that we do every day, going out to eat in a restaurant, maybe taking a taxi cab, maybe dropping off our dry cleaning, or driving by a construction project or a landscaping project.
Or if you and I were rich, the people that would be cleaning our houses.
Well, exactly. We see these people day by day. Who is it that I'm talking about? I'm talking about the estimated 12 million undocumented workers in the United States. They make up about 4% of our country's population. And they're often referred to in the media and by our political quote-unquote leaders as illegal aliens.
Yes.
I don't like to use that phrase. I think it's pejorative. I think it dehumanizes these folks. But it's a very important issue. what are we going to do about the 12 million people who are, in fact, in this country illegally, and they're being joined by, an estimated 2 or 3 more million people each year. And that's what the U.S. Senate, that's what Congress is debating up here in Washington this week. We have two competing proposals, Jack. We have a very draconian proposal out of the U.S. House of Representatives that focuses only on penalties and border security.
Well, I'm sort of wondering, is this issue the new gay issue?
Well, I'm going to get to that in a minute, because it really can't be for the Republican Party. What's at issue? We've got this really tough measure in the House that doesn't really truly address what's going to happen to the 12 million people who are already here, except that they, if they're caught, they would be charged with a felony offense, and they would somehow be deported. I don't know how you deport 12 million people, because you'd have to line up buses, and somebody actually calculated this, you'd have to line up buses all the way from San Diego in Southern California all the way up to Northern Alaska to be able to find enough buses to put 12 million people on them. Then you have a more compassionate, more humane bill that's being debated in the Senate that would increase border security, but it would also allow these 12 million people to legally find a way to stay in the United States and eventually gain citizenship. Now, here's what's really interesting about this issue politically. Latinos, particularly Latinos that have recently legally immigrated to the United States, are the one demographic group in American politics that swings with great frequency from the Republican to the Democratic Party and back. In 1996, in the 1996 presidential election, 21% of Latinos voted Republican. By the year 2000, that figure was up to 35%.
Interesting.
And by the year 2004, that figure was up to 40%. 40% of Latinos voted Republican. What's interesting, Jack, is that Latinos who were here for one generation or longer were reliably voting Democratic.
Wow.
New immigrants, however, were reliably voting Republican. And why is that? It's because the Republicans went on Univision and Telemundo, the leading TV outlets that many Latino viewers watch, and they bought advertising. Republicans asked for Latino votes and Democrats didn't. These are folks who weren't very familiar with the two-party system in the United States. One side was asking for their vote, another side wasn't. And here's the rub. If the Republicans are able to maintain to that, hang on to that 40% figure, the Republican Party will be the majority party in our country well into the 21st century. But there's a problem and there's a challenge. The challenge is the hardcore right-wing Republican Party base that wants to see these folks, not Latinos who are here legally, mind you, but the new immigrants who are not here legally, they want to see them deported.
Well, that's really interesting because, you think as business owners being mostly Republican, which may not be true, but yet, they still like to have labor that they don't have to worry about paying benefits to or paying decent wages, more or less a living wage.
Right, and that's particularly big business that, in fact, is lobbying. It's a very weird coalition.
Yeah,
it's big business and it's humanitarians on the progressive side of things who are lobbying to let undocumented workers stay here. And it's kind of a hardcore xenophobic fringe that wants them deported. And this is a tough, dicey issue. And if the Republicans want to go nuclear on this, if they want to make this, the gay marriage issue of 2006, they do so at their own peril. They might be able to make short-term political gains at the ballot box this November, but in the long term, they would be relegating themselves to minority parties. party status. You know, it would be, and I've got a quote here from South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, who's a conservative Republican. He said, quote, "It would be political suicide for our party to filibuster a comprehensive solution to a real problem facing America. It would be political suicide to ignore there's 12 million people illegally undocumented who are trying to work and add value to our country." That's a Republican talking, a conservative Republican nonetheless.
Right.
So we're going to see how this thing plays out. The Senate will be passing, probably this week, maybe next week, this more moderate proposal that I talked about. And then we'll go to conference committee, and we'll see how the House approach and the Senate approach can somehow be reconciled with each other. But what's finally going to come out in the end is a compromise that will be pretty palatable to the Democrats, to the moderate Republicans, and to President Bush, who actually, you know, I don't often say nice things about President Bush, but he's leading his party on this. He's going in a better direction than, you know, sort of the hardcore xenophobic wing of his party that wants this more punitive, draconian approach. So it's going to be really interesting to see this play out, and it is so important. You know, we may not stop and sit down and think about it, but this is such an issue that's so important to Houston and to the United States. And Jack, I should add, there's a very important LGBT component to this issue.
Well, okay, yes.
And let me go into that briefly, if I could.
Yes, please.
U.S. immigration policy is largely based on the principle of family unification.
Yes.
Family unification allows U.S. citizens and legal permanent residents to sponsor their spouses for immigration purposes. However, same-sex partners of U.S. citizens and permanent residents are not considered spouses because of anti-gay marriage federal laws such as the Defense of Marriage Act. Therefore, same-sex partners who might be legal U.S. citizens cannot sponsor their partners who might be undocumented workers, thus allowing those partners to become U.S. citizens.
Right.
It's one of the areas where LGBT people are really, really discriminated against. This is important in Houston. There are, according to the 2000 census, 3,000 same-sex Latino couples in Houston, and that's probably a massive undercount, by the way. And of those, fully half of those same-sex couples were born outside of the United States, and fully one-third are here illegally and could be, you know, arrested, picked up, and deported at any time. And meanwhile, even though they are job-holding, they are productive people, they have no path, they have no recourse to gain U.S. citizenship, which is something that you and I take for granted. It's truly an outrage.
Well, there's a number of things. One is, this is a very complex issue, and as much as I'm a news hound, I don't know if I understand it all. HBO recently showed a thing called Walkout, which was a dramatization based on somewhat truth of what happened in East LA in 1968, where a number of high school students just walked out because of the conditions of their schools and the way where they were treated. And there was some talk that that actually may have promoted some of these massive walkouts that went on around the country. And it's just incredible. Another interesting thing that I heard was that these massive walkouts were somewhat ignored by the sort of mainstream medium. It was the Hispanic media that even some of the disc jockeys who compete with each other on radio were helping to organize this and get people out, which is just really incredible. And, you know, they all talk about American values. Well, what's more American than the ability to protest? And it's very complex, because if the Republicans really wanted to deal with this issue, they would prosecute some of the employers. I'm not saying they should do this, but if they wanted to do that, and I thought I heard on NPR, if I'm not correct, that only two employers got prosecuted last year in the entire country on this issue last year.
Well, Jack, you mentioned something that I find very perceptive. The U.S. media kept reporting over and over again that all of these walkouts, which happened in Houston, which happened in Dallas and Fort Worth and here in Washington, D.C. and in Maryland and Virginia and New York City and just all over the country, hundreds of thousands of students walked out of their classes. And the U.S. media kept saying that there were no leaders to these walkouts. But there were. There was the Hispanic media. There were people who started a text messaging chain.
Yes.
They text messaged 10 of their friends, and then those 10 friends text messages 10 friends each, and all of a sudden you have a pyramid effect. And then there's something, and I'm not really familiar with this, but there's something called Facebook that where a lot of young people...
Are you sure you're not talking about MySpace?
MySpace is the larger
one. We're both too old here, David.
Well, there's a couple of things like MySpace that are developing, so
my niece is all over
now.
That. I don't get it.
Well, and we really do need to understand that, and it was, in fact...
We might could use that... organizing model, though.
Well, and MoveOn.org was you know, sort of a model for the Dean campaign. And it's actually interesting. In today's Chronicle, there's a story about that there was a school bus that rolled over around here and how the kids, the younger people, were communicating. You know, they don't watch TV or as much, or they don't watch the news, they don't read the newspaper, but they're text messaging each other. And that's how the word got out. And it's interesting because when Amy talks about some of the stuff that's happening at rallies and protests and stuff, how somehow those texting services get shut off. And this may have been below radar. So, you know, all the billions of dollars we spend on the FBI to, you know, to infiltrate these organizations, maybe they didn't get to do it.
Mm-hmm. David, is it your impression that a lot of the young people really understood the issues about what they were marching about?
Deb, that's a really good question. What I get is this. A lot of young people understood that all of a sudden some conservative Republicans were trying to go after their parents.
Yeah. That was interesting. Right. And, you know, you should never be stereotypical, but a lot of these people work incredibly hard jobs. They don't get, you know, they get paid under the table. And there was a really good analysis on NPR on Sunday about is this whole thing about people not being citizens, is this a plus effect or is it a minus effect on the economy? And in reality, when you put everything together from what they look at, it's just a little bit of a plus. You know, does this hold on wages to everybody else? And the answer is, well, maybe a little bit, but, you know, and I don't know the answer to all these questions.
Well, Jack, here's an interesting statistic for you. A Pew Research study recently came out that showed of the approximately 12 million undocumented workers in this country, the unemployment rate is lower than it is among the legal workforce here of adults here in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we're talking about a group of people, a group of individuals who have a higher and better work ethic on average than the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. And as far as immigration goes in regarding gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, and HIV-positive people, I mean, to me, the bigger problem is that they didn't have a good immigration policy to begin with, and now what we're faced with the fact that we do have this large immigrant population, is what is the solution of how we can deal with it, how we can make the immigration policies work better? Because when you come down to it, bottom line, we all just about were immigrants somewhere
right.
in our family.
Right.
I mean, I had a few relatives that were here to greet them, but other than that, most of them, you know, came over on a boat from somewhere.
Well, sure. And in fact, my ancestors came over in the 1600s. They were Dutch, and they didn't speak English for 100 years, and they were indentured servants. And the answer is that we have to make our immigration policy reflect and mirror a humane American society. And when we talk about these things, it has to be humane toward lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgender people. It has to be humane toward women. You know, we have to look at social issues in Africa and, you know, look at issues that some women in Africa and the Middle East face. And we have to relax our immigration policy to be sensitive to those issues. And we have to realize that we can't solve this thing by building a 1,200-mile wall with barbed wire on top.
Well,
it ain't gonna work.
And there are many problems in Mexico that need to be solved too, as is in the countries below Mexico, as is in our country. Many things have to be solved, and you know we're talking about probably the worst president we've ever had.
I don't think there's any question.
Yeah, and you know, if we had kids, and certainly Deborah, you have kids, but it's your kids' kids are going to be paying for the mistakes of this administration, both financially and both politically. And they're talking about Afghanistan. That the reality is that they're just as almost as bad as what they were before. The Taliban's back in power. The warlords are back in power, and it's just a failed policy. And you know, it's real easy to sort of pick on this president, but just look at the facts. I wish he would just look at the facts himself.
There is some good news to report, Jack.
Yay, let's hear it for the good news, David.
Deb, you can now go all the way from the Atlantic Ocean to the Pacific Ocean, and for the first time, not ever set foot in a state on your way from the East Coast to the West Coast where Bush's approval rating is above 45%.
Wow.
Well, but, you know, and that's interesting. I mean, there seems to be this force that they want change. There seems to be this force that, you know, the system, you know, present leaders are not there. But when you actually go into a particular congressional district like Tom DeLay's or a lot of them, they'll still vote for these people because they perceive these people of having the ability to make things better in their particular district.
8 months and one day, Jack. That's how long it is until November Election Day. I think we're going to see a big change coming.
Well, and I hope so. And certainly when you watch West Wing, which is, you know, winding down its series, and just watch how wonderful that show is, that even the Republican that's running for president is a decent, you know, progressive person. But it's like everything that they touch, you know, seems to just fall apart. The war is terrible. The economy, you know, there's so many problems with the economy. The debt of this nation is just absolutely, you know, the worst it's ever been. And then we've got people who are fearing each other. And they, you know, and this is interesting. There's a entertainer and rock star called Henry Rollins. And he did this whole skit, and he basically said the reason is because of, you know, God and gays, that he, you know, he's got the power. And the reality is he's less godly than a lot of atheists are.
That's true. And we sure didn't mean to give him the power. They just use us as a wedge issue and a fundraising tactic. You know, they put fear into people's minds because they don't know the truth. And then all of a sudden it's got, you know, queers can't get married and, oh, queers can't adopt children because of what? I don't know what they think. But we are making progress. I was talking to a woman from Ecuador who's here visiting, and when she was talking about the way it is there, it's like where we were in this country 30 years ago.
Well, you know, Deb and Jack, as Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. liked to say, the moral arc of the universe is long, but bends toward justice.
Well, and each of us have to do what we can in our own way, and whether it's, you know, we're lucky to have this radio show, this radio station here in town, but like, we have a runoff going on right now, the election, and it's early voting Monday, today through Friday, and the next Tuesday is the election. And in fact, we're going to be talking to a Democratic candidate for the Senate. That we have to do what we can, whether it's going out to vote, whether it's knocking on people's door, whether it's getting on a phone and talking to your friends. And it's really easy to be outraged and talk to the choir, your circle of friends, but how do you try to reach outside that? And maybe we're all spoiled living inside the loop or the beltway, but the reality is that we all are in charge of doing education.
That's certainly true, Jack. There's no words that could be any truer.
And David, is the there? I know Frist is pushing for a vote this week. Is that correct on the immigration bill?
That is correct, Deb.
And what's the inside info on that? What
well,
can
the
we
only
expect?
Question really is whether the conservative wing of the Republican Party is going to try to filibuster this moderate Senate approach that I've talked about.
I thought they were against filibustering.
Well, you know, it all depends on the situation.
Right.
But the fact
right.
of the matter is
right.
that even if they filibuster, Democrats and moderate Republicans have the votes to get this thing passed, so it will pass and will go to conference committee. And we'll see what the House and the Senate hammer out.
Wow. Well, does that about wrap it up for tonight with David?
Well, David, let's talk about what you do for your day job.
Well, Jack, for my day job, I'm the communications director for the National Coalition to Abolish the Death Penalty. You can visit our website at www.ncadp.org. Again, that's ncadp.org.
David, thank you very much for joining us. And David usually joins us on the first Monday of every month to keep us updated on what's going on beyond our loopway here in Houston.
Thank you, like David. I like to say, inside the Beltway and beyond, and that's the D.C. Beltway.
Thank you, David.
Well, thank you, both of you, and have a good evening.
You too.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Hello, darling. It's nice to see you. It's been a long time. You're still the woman that you used to be. How's your new love? Are you happy? I hope you're doing fine. Just to know it means so much to me. What's that, darling? How am I doing? I guess I'm doing alright. Except I can't sleep and I cry all night till dawn. What I'm trying to say is that I love you. I'm so sorry that I did you wrong. Come here, darling. Let me kiss you. Just for old time's sake, let me hold you in my arms one more time. Thank you, darling. May God bless you, and may each step you to the things you seek to find. Goodbye, darling. I gotta go now. I gotta try to find a way to lose these memories of a love so warm and true. And if you should ever find it in your heart to forgive me, come back, darling. I'll be waiting.
This is J.D., and that's Gretchen Phillips with Hello, Darlin', the old Conway Twitty song, and we'll talk more about Gretchen in a little while.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, you know, in Texas, there's always an election coming up.
It seems so.
Doesn't it? Doesn't it? Well, and in fact, right now we're in the season of early voting, and it's a runoff for a number of different places, but there's two statewide on the Democratic side, and one is the lieutenant governor, and the other one is for U.S. Senator. And on the line with us is Barbara Ann Ranofsky, who is running for that seat and has been endorsed by the Houston GLBT Political Caucus. And I know...
The Political Action Committee of the caucus.
Okay,
make
Deborah.
Sure we distinguish that.
Yes. And I'm sure it's a very busy time for you right now, Barbara Ann, but why don't you tell us a little bit about on some of the issues that you're running on?
Thank you. Well, the main three issues, I've traveled the state for the last 2 years and over 340 trips, are education, health care, and I must say health care is number one on most people's minds, as well as veterans affairs. Certainly we talk about other issues, but what I've been learning is that health care, education, and veterans issues really hit home with folks.
Well, certainly it seems like they're having a lot of trouble here in Texas dealing with the education issues, and it seems like they want to throw in vouchers that would really destroy the educational system here. But health care is definitely a national issue that seems to, you know, be a problem for everybody, for employers, for everybody, even the people who have these, you know, great jobs working for great corporations. Even that's being cut back.
Exactly. And when you think of Texas, just remember we are number one in uninsured adults and number one in uninsured children. And of course, for folks with part-time jobs, it's even worse because their percentage of uninsurance is huge. The employer-based insurance system doesn't work.
So what do we do? What's the answer to this?
Well, we need massive insurance reform. And the massive insurance reform that this country needs must be undertaken to provide preventive care, which would include education, and for something called prompt pay, which doctors recognize is absolutely necessary to keep the doors of clinics open. And thirdly, we need something called single risk pool. And single risk pool means that an insurance company cannot discriminate against an individual because that individual is likely to need health care and therefore make a claim against his insurance. Without single risk pool, the situation we have is that at-risk people are discriminated against by insurance companies and can't get the insurance they need and therefore can't get the health care they need.
And how does this differ from the plan that Hillary Clinton was talking about a few years ago?
Well, the plans I saw were quite vague didn't really address the issue of compelling insurance companies or the government to cover the people who need coverage, the working people as well as the folks who are out of a job. It did not address it. Instead, some of the plans actually tried to use the employer as the be-all and end-all. And with the current system, with people changing jobs, and with the employers not being able to afford it, and with employees not being able to afford the premiums, those plans are completely unworkable.
Well, here in Texas, the CHIP program is not even funded, if I understand it correctly, enough where the federal government would be like throwing in like up to $3 for every dollar. And CHIPS is the children's program for young people who are not insured. And the CHIPS program basically, for every dollar the state throws in, the federal government throws in three. And so the state government is not even like efficiently using federal money.
You're right. It's a statewide shame. It is a shame. And of course the people who suffer are the children. And children don't have a whole lot of good lobbying either at the state or the federal level. You don't see a lot of children wandering the lobbies of our state or federal houses.
So do you think this is something that is, I mean, the system, we seem to be paying more in this country for health care and have a poorer system than probably most of the Western countries.
You're right. We pay way too much for health care. We get no economies of scale, and we get poorer quality health care than many, many other countries. The solution lies in part in preventive care. If insurance companies covered preventive care, if people were encouraged to prevent diseases or minimize the losses from diseases, we wouldn't have the massive illnesses we've got. Let me give you an example of metabolic disorders, the disease that causes diabetes. We have endemic levels of diabetes in this state, particularly in South Texas. Childhood diabetes caused by obesity can be prevented if we can get to children early enough. The same is true of cancer. The same is true of many transmissible diseases where education and proper health care, proper habits can prevent dreadful diseases. And it wouldn't just save billions, and I said billions, not millions of dollars. It would save lives.
Well, is this a drug? I mean, are the drug companies against this because they make so much money on it? And what about the doctors?
You know, I think the doctors are very much in favor of it. As you may know, I'm a healthcare lawyer. I represent healthcare institutions. I'm married to a physician. And I will tell you that the physicians who are supporting me, including, by the way, the president of the American Diabetes Association for this region, recognize that it is time for massive insurance reform. They must emphasize preventive care in this country, and particularly in this state, given all of the diseases that we've got. And, of course, prompt pay is part of the solution. Insurance companies must be required to promptly pay their claims.
Right.
In the state of Texas, Governor Perry has repeatedly vetoed prompt pay. We really need reform on a national scale. This is one of those good national reforms that isn't going to come from the state level.
Well, probably some of us out here, after seeing the drug plan that was introduced by the Republicans last year.
You mean the Medicare?
Medicare,
plan,
yes, yeah.
Which is a farce.
Yeah, exactly.
It was outrageous, and it's not as though it was a secret at the time. Some professed to be surprised. The truth is, the statute was very clear that it would be criminal. It would be a criminal offense for the government to use its massive bargaining power to negotiate better prices for seniors. As a result, prices will be out of sight. Compare that to the VA.
Yeah.
In the VA system, they're allowed to negotiate and use their massive bargaining power for better prices. And our veterans, until the government decides to treat them increasingly unfairly, but the original cost of the drugs is quite reasonable to our veterans.
Well, exactly. And I read an editorial, I can't remember whether it was a Chronicle or New York Times, that basically said the same thing. Let's use that model. It works. And, yeah, it works. It's a model that actually works. And if we take that and use it on a bigger scale, just imagine how much better that would be.
You know, that's a great point, because in the 1990s, the VA healthcare system underwent massive reformation. It encouraged preventive care. It took all comers. It was what I call a single risk pool, in the sense that any veteran was treated as a complete person and not as just one symptom, such as shrapnel in the back. And by treating veterans that way, it attracted so many veterans that the system, so well planned, became overloaded, was underfunded, and then had to reverse itself. And
wow.
Now, unfortunately for our veterans, they have this wonderful reformed system, and they're turned away. We have a whole section of veterans called Section 8 veterans, Group 8 veterans, who, because they can't prove that their disability or injury was service-related, they can't get the care they need at VA, and the government shuns them off to whatever system might exist, be it Medicaid, be it private insurance, or be it charity. Or, as many as happens to many of our veterans, they go without the necessary health care. And keep in mind, these are the guys and women who were promised health care when they enlisted, and they've earned it, and they've been denied it. And I must add, even though my opponent is not Kay Bailey Hutchison in the runoff, I must add that Senator Hutchison is personally responsible as subcommittee chairwoman of Appropriations for Veterans Affairs for the terrible state of veterans funding in this country. Of course, I need to get past the runoff to get to her, and that's why I really appreciate this chance to tell you, early voting's already started, as you mentioned. If people don't get out and vote for Radnofsky, we're going to have a problem on our hands, because we've got an 80-year-old man running who has no intention of campaigning against Kay Bailey Hutchison. For 10 times, he rolls over and plays dead when he gets out of the primary, or when he, you know, if he gets passed. And he's won several primaries.
So I have a concern about the veterans, one being that gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered people can lose whatever benefits they have as veterans if they are outed, because the don't ask, don't tell policy. And the other thing is, with the war that is currently taking place, you know, it's bad enough that we're really not getting the real information about the number of people that are dying, but the numbers that are coming back so wounded or so disabled, we're not seeing that. And they're here. This is the system we're offering them. This is what we're saying. Go over there and put your life at risk for this phony war, and then you're not going to get much if you make it back.
It's an excellent point that we have increasing numbers of all sorts of our veterans coming back, regardless of their sexual orientation, regardless of whether they're male or female, regardless of what race they are. They were promised health care when they enrolled. This is the promise of this government to its service people. And the government is failing on that promise. It is shocking. And your comment is very well taken. You know, our service people are coming back with more serious injuries. They're surviving because the field care is so superb, but they're surviving with terrible injuries, and they'll need care, many of them, for the rest of their lives. We're about to get into a crisis mode with our veterans. Frankly, we've already reached it, to be quite blunt. It's a crisis.
Yes. So, is there something that you particularly would like to say to our listeners before we close off for this evening?
Well, I'd love them to visit Radnofsky.com because these and other issues are explored in a lot of detail in an issues chart that some folks have said has more footnotes than a church organ. But if they could go to Radnofsky.com, and frankly, right now, if they would go out and make the pledge to vote tomorrow, early voting goes through April 7th. It's Radnofsky against Kelly. Kelly is not the respected entertainer who died in, 10 years ago.
Is this the former Houston City Council member?
No. This is a guy named Gene Kelly.
Yeah.
But I hope all the listeners out there will understand that Gene Kelly, the wonderful dancer from Singing in the Rain, is dead. This is not the singing, dancing Gene Kelly. This is Gene Kelly who just runs all the time. He's 80 years old. He doesn't leave his pajamas or his house, and he runs on the strength of his name. So if every listener out there would get out and vote in the runoff, you don't have to have voted in the primary to do so. Go vote Radnofsky, and you will, I promise, get a strong advocate in the Senate.
Well, let's spell that. It's Radnofsky.
Exactly. Three syllables, R-A-D, like Democrat, N-O-F, like Frank, S like Sam, K-Y.
And to vote, early voting is from now until Friday.
Yes, sir.
And you can vote in Harris County. You can vote at any of the, like, 30 or 20 different locations. And one of them, of course, is the Metropolitan Multipurpose Center on 1475 West Gray. And you can check today's Chronicle, or you can go to harrisvote.org, which is an excellent site. I mean, I got to give Harris County credit for having a great website and letting people know about it. Or you can vote on Tuesday. And we're not only asking you all to vote, but get your friends and family out there. Now, I do need to make one, you know, KPFT does not endorse any candidates because we are a nonprofit organization, but we're allowed to discuss the issues. And Barbara, thank you for coming on. And I know you have a busy schedule. So
Thank you so much.
We really appreciate you talking to our audience. And you have been endorsed by the Houston GLBT Political Caucus.
Yes, sir, and a number of the Stonewall Democrat groups and some other very fine organizations.
Okay, well, thank you, Barbara, for joining us.
Thank y'all kindly.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
It seems the love I've known has always been the most destructive kind. Guess that's why now I feel so old before my time. Yesterday, when I was young, the taste of life was sweet as rain upon my tongue. I tasted life as if it were a foolish game, the way the evening breeze may tease a candle flame. The thousand dreams I dream, the splendid things I plan, I always build, alas, on weak and shifting sand. I live my night I was young.
Gretchen Phillips with Lord Douglas Phillips, the trio, and Yesterday When I Was Young. And this is an artist, it's no secret that I most admire her. I interviewed her last summer, and she was the feature of an entire Queer Music Heritage show in August. And if you don't know who she is, you might visit queermusicheritage.com, where you can see all the different groups she's been involved with, very influential groups. In fact, during my intro to that show, I joked that if there was a queer music highway, there would be a sign, Gretchen Phillips' next five exits.
Yeah, she's really an amazing talent, and I spoke with her just last night because she's coming into town this Friday for a Diva House concert, which I'm part of the volunteer team that is helping to produce that. And it was said in Texas Monthly in January of 1999, perhaps an uncompromising approach to the inherent politics of pleasure, coupled with a ceaseless desire for fun, is the reason Gretchen Phillips is a fringe legend. Perhaps, maybe it's just the good music. Gretchen was born in Galveston, and her folks were in a folk band. They're musicians, and she went to HSPBA, and she has felt more comfortable working in bands, doing harmony, and has had a wide range, everything from punk to country to everything in between.
Oh, she covers lots of genres.
Right, lots of genres. She is a little nervous about doing solo.
Well, she's been a little bit out of the spotlight. Her last album was about 3 years ago, and it was a duets album, so that was maybe a little safer, but I'm confident she will be just fine solo. She's got a rich background.
Yeah, she's going to share a lot of her intimate experiences, so if you're not lesbian friendly, this is not a show for you.
I'll be there.
And well, you're lesbian friendly. And she has some stories to tell about growing up in Houston, and more or less stories on herself.
Okay, the when and the where?
The when is Friday, April the 7th, starting at 7 p.m. That's when the show starts. Doors will open at 6:30. It's at the Houston Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Community Center, 3400 Montrose Boulevard, Suite 207. Parking in the garage is free, but you have to tell the attendants that you're there for an event. And there is a ticket price. You can call 832-452-1169 and reserve your ticket or get them at the door.
One quick question. What famous band was she in?
Two Nice Girls, among many bands. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A civil unions showdown pits the ACT against Australian feds, and wisdom from the gridiron gay man who lived alone in the trenches and the human rights hero who embodied Ireland's broken heart. All that and more this week as we begin our 19th year together discovering This Way Out.
I'm Charles Hall.
And I'm Greg Gordon.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian gay community for the week ending April 1st, 2006. A proposed civil unions law in the Australian Capital Territory, or ACT, has prompted the federal government's immediate vow to overturn such legislation if it passes. Introduced in the ACT Parliament this week, the bill would grant same-gender couples rights and responsibilities virtually equal to heterosexual marriage in all but name. However, just as the U.S. Congress has oversight on laws passed by the District of Columbia, Prime Minister John Howard's government can overrule any ACT law it doesn't like. Earlier this year, Attorney General Philip Ruddock said in a nationally broadcast radio interview that the question of whether or not there are civil unions is a matter for the states and territories. Ruddock angered equality activists this week by writing to ACT Chief Minister John Stanhope, who's spearheading the civil unions legislation, threatening the federal veto and warning him not to press for its passage.
The looming confrontation sparked debate on legal recognition of same-gender couples in many other parts of the country. Western Australia's gay and lesbian equality group called on its government to enact legislation similar to that introduced in the ACT, noting that the Howard government can override the laws of a territory, but not a state.
In Victoria, the Green Party asked their state parliament to follow the lead of the ACT and offer all Victorian couples legal recognition of their relationships. Independent openly gay MP Andrew Alexander has thus far been thwarted from introducing a private member's bill to create civil unions.
And in Tasmania, which enacted a form of civil unions in 2003, leading activist Rodney Croom equated ACT Chief Minister John Stanhope with popular San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom, who opened marriage to same-gender couples in his city before they were invalidated by the California Supreme Court. There will be a gap between the passage of the ACT civil union scheme and federal legislation to override it, Croom said. The former is expected to pass in May. The latter can't be passed before June. In those few short weeks, expect a large number of same-sex couples to have their union solemnized in the ACT, he continued, their ranks swollen by those who will now want to make a statement against government prejudice.
South Africa's highest court ruled late last year that the country's marriage laws discriminate against same-gender couples and ordered Parliament to enact legislation by the end of this year to eliminate that bias. Furthering couples' equality in that country, the Pretoria High Court issued a landmark ruling this week naming a gay man as the sole heir to his partner's estate. Mark Gorey has been battling the parents of his partner, Henry Brooks, over who should rightfully be the legal heir after Brooks died suddenly in April 2005 without a will. Judge Willie Hartzenberg declared the current Interstate Succession Act unconstitutional and said it should acknowledge same-gender relationships. The ruling ordered that the proceeds of the sale of the house and most of its contents that the couple co-owned, which the parents had sold in the interim, be given to Gorey. The executor and the parents were also ordered to pay all court costs. The monetary amount is reportedly not a king's ransom, but Gorey said it's never been about the money. It was about the sanctity of our relationship, he said.
But the Supreme Judicial Court of Massachusetts, the only U.S. state where same-gender marriage is legal, has upheld a law passed in 1913 that forbids out-of-state couples to wed in Massachusetts if their marriage would not be legally recognized in their home state. The antiquated legislation was passed at a time when interracial marriage was a hot-button issue, and marriage equality activists have charged Governor and probable Republican presidential candidate Mitt Romney of dusting off the previously obscure law in a cynical political maneuver. Romney has said he doesn't want Massachusetts to become the Las Vegas of same-sex marriage. Rejecting a challenge to the law by eight out-of-state couples, the court declared that the laws of this commonwealth have not endowed non-residents with an unfettered right to marry. However, the ruling applied only to the plaintiff couples from Connecticut, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont because same-gender marriage is specifically outlawed in those states. The court withheld a ruling on the other plaintiff couples from New York and Rhode Island because neither state has a so-called defense of marriage statute or a clear-cut legal precedent that addresses the question. That part of the case was sent back to Superior Court Judge Carol Ball, who had originally upheld the 1913 law, to reconsider the measure on an expedited basis if and when same-gender marriage becomes legal in one or both of those two states.
In other U.S. state matrimonial news, Connecticut's highest court heard arguments in late March in a lawsuit brought by several lesbian-gay couples in the state challenging the ban on same-gender marriage there. It's not known when a ruling will be announced. At about the same time, lawmakers in both Maryland, and New Hampshire rejected attempts to add a ban on lesbian and gay marriage to their respective state constitutions. However, Florida's Supreme Court has approved ballot language outlawing same-gender marriage or its substantial equivalent, clearing the way for a petition drive to put the issue before that state's voters in 2008.
But a young boy and his two dads will be reunited as a family thanks to a Maryland trial court ruling this week. Ulf Hedberg and Blaise Dalhousie have been forced to live apart since mid-2002 after a Virginia court ruled that Hedberg could not maintain custody of his son unless his partner moved out of the home they'd shared for years. The family moved to Maryland, where the men maintained separate residences, and in 2004, Hedberg asked the state to modify the custody order. The trial court initially granted summary judgment to the boy's mother, Hedberg's ex-wife, who had moved to Florida and who objected to Dalhousie's second dad status, arguing that a Maryland court didn't have the right to revisit custody orders from a different state. But in June 2005, a Maryland appeals court sent the matter back to trial. Since none of the parties remained in Virginia, and because Maryland had become the boy's home state, the court now ruled Maryland has jurisdiction, and the custody terms could be modified if a material change in circumstances arose that was not in the best interest of the child. The court agreed with Hedberg's assertion that his now 13-year-old son was very unhappy over being separated from Dalhousie, and that the teen's quality of life had been substantially diminished because he missed living with his two dads under one roof. Hedberg's lawyer, Susan Silber, called the decision an important ruling which acknowledges the best interest of the child. We are pleased to reunite this loving family.
Also reunited with his loving family this week was Canadian James Loney following 4 months of captivity as a hostage in Iraq. What wasn't known until now is that the Christian peace activist is a gay man. His family and his partner, Dan Hunt, kept quiet about Loney's sexual orientation out of fear for what his captors might do if they found out. As reports out of Iraq continue to describe more and more religious-inspired killings of gay men, being out can literally be life-threatening in that country. Loney was rescued by coalition forces last week, along with fellow Canadian Harmeet Souden and Briton Norman Kember. The executed body of a fourth hostage, American Tom Fox, was found earlier this month in Baghdad. Reading from a brief prepared statement, Loney told reporters, "I need some time to get reacquainted with my partner Dan, my family, community, and freedom itself. I'm eager to tell the story of my captivity and rescue," he said, "but I need a little time first."
And finally, if we awarded a prize for a homophobe of the week, there would be at least a few candidates this week. The City Council of Kanab, Utah, has formally proclaimed support for the natural family, defined as a working husband, a stay-at-home wife, and what the council referred to as a full quiver of children. But local businesses this week, seeing the tourist dollar downside, began distancing themselves from that proclamation. Signs have popped up in shop windows in Kanab featuring a string of rainbow-colored people with the slogan, "Everyone welcome here."
Speaking just days before Italy's national elections, Pope Benedict XVI this week denounced same-gender marriage, saying that the Church has a duty to defend the recognition and promotion of the natural structure of the family as a union between a man and a woman based on marriage. But that's a variation of the same old song Benedict has been crooning on a regular basis since even before he became Pope.
Another old song asks,
"How much is that doggy in the window? I do hope that you don't mind if I go home and say..."
And the blatantly biased prize this week, if we awarded one, would go to a kennel owner in Sweden for her homophobic response to that musical question. Sweden's discrimination ombudsman, a government watchdog agency, filed a lawsuit charging that the unidentified pet proprietor was eager to sell a puppy to a female customer, but then refused after she discovered that the woman lives with a lesbian partner. The court fined the hateful kennel owner 20,000 kroner, about $2,600, for, one could say, barking up the wrong tree.
That's News Wrap for the week ending April 1st, 2006, written this week by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon.
And I'm Charles Hall.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky, Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, and Glenn Holt. And the entire Queer Voices crew.
To be gay, to sing if you're happy. This way.
And we are happy that way. And in fact, I love that song. I really have always really enjoyed that song. So what's going on, eh, Jack?
Oh, so we're sort of turning the table here.
Yeah, we're going to interview Jack Belinsky.
Well, first of all, I want to complain about these chairs in the studio.
I know.
I said it's a good thing we brought our own padding.
We're going to have to talk to management or something.
And I'm sure they will just jump up and listen to us.
We have four mics tonight.
Yes. Only
three of us in here. And the reason we want to talk to Jack Belinsky tonight on Queer Voices is because he is the executive director of Pride Houston, which is the committee that oversees all activities having to do with what is now Pride Month. It used to be the parade, and then it was Pride Week, and now we have a whole month of events and celebration, which the grand finale, is our marvelous nighttime parade. And so where are we in the process right now, Jack?
Well, we're in the process of getting really busy. Because now, and I am a paid employee of Pride Houston, but even if I worked all the time, I couldn't do it myself. It takes lots and lots and lots of volunteers, just like KPFT. The community is what makes Pride happen. And I am very proud of the organization in the community who rallies behind the fact that this is now the largest Pride event in the Southwest, that we're trying to really build on the festival. And in fact, we think probably if things go, we hope, as well as they've been going, then a couple years we'll outgrow that space for the festival and we'll need to find a new home for the festival.
And where will the festival be?
We don't know.
We don't have it scheduled for a location.
I mean, in future years, you don't.
Future
know.
Years. I mean, this year, yes, good question.
That's what I meant. Where will it be this year?
This year, the festival was last year, which is on Yoakum, sort of behind, next to Half Price Books, Kroger, that area there, behind the Hollywood movie rental place. So it's back there. I mean, basically, we close down those streets at 5 in the morning, set it up, and the festival opens at 2, and the festival goes to about 8 o'clock, and the parade starts at 8:45. So those streets along there, it's a fenced-in area that we'll put fences up there, and we do charge because it costs lots of money to get the talent, entertainers, and stuff like that. And we have a wonderful committee that's putting the festival together.
So what all is included in the festival?
Well, there's going to be a number of things. And one of the things that I'm very proud of, because the mission statement for Pride is educate, commemorate, and celebrate. And one of the things that we're doing, as we did last year, is we have a community tent that is this year being sponsored by the Bunnies. So you all go to the Bunny Party to help support Pride and the other organizations. But the Bunnies underwrite the cost of building this tent, and then we are able to give the nonprofits, a number of nonprofits, at a very, very low price to be able to have presence there. So that to me is one of the most important things, the fact that we have a lot of nonprofits that are going to be able to share resources, sell a few little things if they want to.
Give out brochures,
yes, and recruit for volunteers, mm-hmm. and let people in the community know about it. Another thing that we're doing this year is we're going to have an air-conditioned tent that's going to be featuring GCAM, and basically have sort of...
And GCAM is
the Gulf Coast Archivals Museum, and we're working with them so that they will be displaying some old stuff, or, you know, stuff about our history. And as we're, you know, we're learning, and me being in my 50s, is that younger people don't necessarily know the relevance of pride. And it's, you know, that's part of our mission statement, to educate so that we don't end up like we used to be and having bar raids all the time.
There's probably people that'll pay the price of admission just to get into the air conditioning.
Probably, yes. Yes.
And then there's vendors there as well, for-profit businesses.
Vendors,
that,
and we have a lot, you know, we're hiring talent. Taylor Dane is one of them.
Yeah, talk a little bit about that.
Well,
a biggie.
Yes, that is a biggie. We've been very lucky to deal with that. And you know, that's that committee's done a wonderful job in selecting the entertainment. To be honest with you, I don't know all about it. It's not quite where I'm focusing at, because they're doing such a great job on it. But the fact, and it's all on our website, pridehouston.org, under the festival area.
Well, I can tell you the entertainment's top rate.
Well,
you know JD's going to be on top of that.
Well, and the reality is that JD would not say that unless he really felt that way.
Besides Taylor Dane, the dance diva, there's Dylan Rice out of Chicago. He won an Out Music Award last year for male artist. He is a good artist. KJ Dennert was nominated for another Out Music Award a year before. Casey Donovan, another artist, will be in town. These are top-rate people. I'm looking very forward to seeing them.
And then there's also going to be a number of what we call local performers.
More local artists, yes.
And they're in the process of selecting that, because the deadline was like Friday to get people to apply for that. So
the price of admission, which is pretty low for this festival, includes getting to see Taylor Dane,
yes,
and all these other folks?
Yes, yes.
Wow.
Yes. And there's going to be two stages. There's going to be, you know, the big stage, and then what we call the community stage, which seems to happen at every festival.
But they're far enough apart, at least last year, that they sure did not conflict with each other.
Well, I wasn't, you know, festival was new to me, and like I said, we have such a great committee that I wasn't involved in every detail, because they're doing a great job on that. I didn't know how that was all going to work, but it did. And in fact, this year it's going to be even a little bit more separation, because they're taking over a little bit more room in that area there. We're lucky to find a space in Montrose that has very few residents there that you were able to close the streets down. And the businesses like Kroger have worked with us, so we're very appreciative of that.
I worked the gate for the festival last year as a volunteer, and that was a lot of fun, because I got to see almost everybody that came through. And there's many volunteer opportunities for both the day of the festival, during the festival, and for the parade.
Well, and I do want to comment. I mean, you know, we were focused on building up the parade for a number of years, and we got to a point where the parade is, you know, we pretty much got it down. I mean, we're always trying to do something different so that it's not the same old thing. But the past 2 years, this will be the second year that we've really tried to build up the festival to be on par, and we're not there yet, but some of the other major cities like Long Beach and San Diego and Los Angeles and San Francisco, we still got a ways to go. It's still hot out there, and we know that. We're still trying to figure out. We figured out how to, you know, do the parade, because it's at night. It's still hot, but the sun isn't beating down on you. But the festival, it's going to be hot out there, and so we're working on some ideas and innovative ways, and they're sort of building this oasis inside the festival area. We've got a young architect that's his project.
Oh, cool.
So, yes, exactly.
Cool. Ha-ha.
And
what did you learn from last year's parade that you're going to do different?
From the parade, there's always some tweaking to do. You know, there's always occasionally a little bit of gaps that we don't like. The one thing that we had last year that we won't have this year is the Strangerettes from Dallas. It seems like they want to every other year go somewhere else, so they're going to go to Chicago this year for the games.
But I think we're having our own Houston cheer team as part of the gay games, and maybe they'll be ready for...
We're hoping for that. We also have a very young gentleman who is spearheading this, is performers. Basically, people who are not part of a contingent. The way our parade is set up is that to be in the parade, you have to be part of a contingent. Whether it is a Pride volunteer, you can be in the parade as a Pride volunteer, but most of the other organizations, like the churches.
A delegation, like you're going to be with the lesbians over age 50, or PFLAG, or with the transgender organization.
So there's no Deborah Bell float.
No, there isn't.
You don't know that.
at this point.
Well, at this point.
It won't be up front, I can tell you that. But we have this gentleman named Jose who is actually recruiting performers, and he's going to, I think he's going to have like three different contingents in the parade to, you know, sort of the drag queens or marching or something, and it's like he's handling that. He's doing a great job, and, you know, sometimes dealing with some of those people is a little bit difficult.
Dueling drag queens?
Yes.
I've been on floats. I've walked. I've sat and watched, and I've volunteered, and I think the best fun of the doing the parade is when you volunteer for it, and I intend to do the same job I did last year, which is to be a bleacher captain, and so I've got dibs on that.
Well, and, you know, we talk about volunteers. It's like we're going to need, because of the expanding of the festival, we're going to need a lot more volunteers this year, and last year we had just some fabulous volunteers that did double shifts, and
we're I ended up doing a double shift.
Yes, we sort of conned people into that, but the organization,
they fed us.
Yeah, well, we've learned some lessons. You got to feed your volunteers.
You kept us with water and food.
You know, and sometimes they have to take my whip away because.
Yes.
But no, in reality is that I am very, very fortunate because we have some of them we call lifers because they work year round, year after year. And some people say, oh, I need to take a break, and they'll come back the next year, or they want to do something different. Like Lynn Sixkiller has been fabulous. She was a parade. She came in working on events one year, and then she sort of got involved in the parade, and she did a fabulous job on the parade. And now she's doing something a little bit different. Basically, she's working with all of our vendors, vendors meaning the people we have to spend money to put the stage up and the trash collection. And
The fun stuff.
Yeah, well, the reality is we try to get volunteers to do as much as they can, but we can't expect volunteers to be picking up the trash. And we have to.
And you need, like, security guards.
We need security.
Medical people.
Right,
and so forth.
And she does very well with, and she's very organized. And she's just an example of some of the many people that we have working year-round. I mean, there's Troy Christensen's been working for a number of years. He helps keep our website up to date. And we actually had this meeting, and as usual, you're going to probably have to shut me up, but we had this meeting on Saturday of the board and some of the other committee members to talk about, let's talk about the future, you know, 3, 4, 5 years down there. No decisions were made, but there's a number of issues that, you know, we need to discuss and stuff to keep the organization healthy and to keep Pride relevant to the younger generation and to reach out to the other aspects of the community. And we're not doing enough. We know that. And the best way to make sure those things are happening is come knocking on our door.
Right. And so there's things people can be doing right now as volunteers.
We have standing Thursday nights from 6 to 9 p.m. and Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. to work on just, if you just want to, you know, show up and, hey, here's my hands, do some, you know, we're always working on mail outs or working on our database. And sometimes we have a few extra people that we can help other organizations in because, you know, we want to share the wealth if we can. But there are many things to do. I mean, one of the things we've been doing the past couple weeks, which is not the most glamorous, is we've been calling our database of volunteers and saying, hey, it's Pride season's coming up. Are you interested in helping out?
Yeah, I've received several calls, which I kind of think is funny. But
yes. Well, in fact, last year it was really funny. We had some people working, and we have three phone lines to be able to call out on, and one person was calling, and the person next to him, his cell phone was ringing. So
it was him.
That was, yes, exactly, because sometimes you can't remember all the names that help out. But so those are the two things. And next Tuesday, we have what's called our production team meeting. That's when all of our chairs of the committees, we have 12 different committees, show up and give a report. That's what's going on. But before that meeting at 6:30, and this is at the Metropolitan Multipurpose Center at 1475 West Gray, is at 6:30 we're sort of going to give an overview of what the organization's about, the culture of the organization. And one of the things I'm very proud about the culture of the organization is that on parade day, nobody from this organization is riding down in a convertible on the parade route. Everybody is working. I mean, the president, Nick Bryan's the president of the organization, last year was pushing porta potties around because it had to be done.
And what's the number one rule of that night? the parade starts on time. It's probably the only thing in the queer community that does.
That starts on time, and that's sort of a culture that we developed from our founders of Carol Clark and Brian Kiefer and myself,
mm-hmm.
that my background in radio is that we start on time because, you know, a night parade, we got to get done by a certain time.
The Pride Week used to be an ad hoc committee, a new committee every year, and there were some people that were around and involved from year to year, but you and Brian and Carol were instrumental in saying, hey, we need an organization ongoing, and now that has developed into a board, plus having you as a paid employee, and then all these volunteer base. But Pride is not just the parade, and it's not just the festival. What are the other things that go on during that month?
Well, we help organize, or we help promote the other events that go on, which we don't really have anything to do with. It's the other organizations, but we help get the word out. And it's like the course, the gay men's course,
right,
is going to have, and the women's course.
Yeah, in fact, there are two different nights. The women's course is one night, and then the gay men's course of Houston is going to be joined by the Turtle Creek Chorale from Dallas, and that's going to be a really fabulous
concert. I'm really looking forward to that. And then there's usually like the fun run, and then there's many, many other things. I think GCAM's going to be doing an event. So one of the things that we do is we really try to get the word out. I mean, you know, of course, we're very lucky to have KPFT that helps. But, you know, we work with some of the commercial radio stations. We work with the GLBT publications. We try to work with the Chronicle and the Houston Press. And we still got a long ways to work with the Hispanic media. That's a goal. And, you know, and then even probably the Vietnamese media, because that there's a big presence here. And, you know, we know we're not serving the community as well as we should, but
but the folks from Hollywood, they always have a wonderful delegation in the parade.
Well, that's not just the answer. I mean,
yeah.
The other thing that's rather interesting is
we're a growing diverse population, and if there's some, you can't get more diverse than the queer population, and sometimes queer people in the community aren't even gay. They're people that are our allies and that come out and support us and believe in, you know, that people should have rights and silly stuff like that.
2 years ago, Deborah Wrigley from Channel 13 was doing the story, and she was interviewing this 90-year-old woman sitting in a lawn chair. And this woman basically says, I wouldn't miss this for the world. I have so much fun. And it's like, we couldn't have bought better publicity than to have that. We found out through very informal polls that about one-third of the people that are watching the parade come from the outside the metropolitan area. And that just totally blew us away because, you know, we think of this as a Houston event or Inside the Loop event. But the reality is this has gotten so big that people come in and from you know, Dallas and Austin and San Antonio because they don't have anything like this. I mean, Austin has a good parade, but it's not as mature as ours. And, you know, first of all, Houston is not a tourist city. And then who comes to Houston in the summer? And so we sort of like disprove this, that if there's a really good event, people will come in. So there's lots of GLBT and GLBT-friendly people who come to Houston.
If you walk up and down the street, you see families and kids.
Yes, but they spend a lot of money coming to Houston, hotel rooms and dinners and stuff like that.
And all the establishments along Westheimer, they probably do more business that one day than they do for half the year.
Yeah, and there's a few that this actually interrupts their business because it, you know, interrupts the parking and stuff. But I'm really proud of the fact that we work with the Neighborhood Association and make sure that our lineup area, that we clean up after it, that we clean up the streets so that it's actually cleaner when we leave. And like 2 years ago, following the parade on Monday, there was this one letter in the Chronicle saying they weren't criticizing us. They were criticizing people that they couldn't walk 5 feet and throw it in the trash container that we put over there. But we do, you know, we do clean up.
Right. And that's a message to everyone that comes to the parade. Don't make us have to clean up.
Well,
by golly.
In any event.
Be better than that.
I mean, you know, reality is there's the Children's Festival that happened this weekend, or iFest. When you go down to these events, you know, carry the thing until you find a trash container.
Yeah, and they're usually pretty convenient. So another part of Pride is recognizing individuals that have made contributions to the community. And the way they're recognized is by being honored as Grand Marshals. So who are the Grand Marshals for this year?
Well, and this is the interesting thing, is that the committee does not pick those. Those are chosen by the community at large, and it's voted in, you know, there's like four different times you can vote, and anybody from the surrounding counties, Harris and surrounding counties, to vote to that. And sometimes, you know, it's somewhat of a popularity contest, but sometimes it works really good. And this year I'm very proud of the fact that Phyllis Fry is our female Grand Marshal. And
what have I told you? They're just Grand Marshals. We don't need to have gender as part of the title.
And you told me that, but the way we have it set up, Phyllis has been a longtime activist and a wonderful person and done some great things, so I'm real proud
of
her.
Long overdue.
And it is overdue, I agree.
Yeah.
Ray Ramirez, who has been involved in Pride and the gay games and the film festival and raising money for the community.
Some campaigns. And
he is the male Grand Marshal. And then we have a honorary Grand Marshal,
which would be a non-GLBT identified individual, but
exactly,
certainly a friend to the community,
and who was elected this year was Reverend Marilyn Meeker Williams, who is at the Bering United Methodist Church and has worked in the community and helped with many different events. She was part of the United Methodist Women in Texas Annual Conference, and she's been in the parade a number of years, and she was refusing, this is really incredible, she refuses to marry any couple until any couple has the opportunity to be married legally.
Now, is there an organizational Grand Marshal this year?
This year, chosen was the Bunnies on the Bayou.
There's those bunnies again. They're just hopping around everywhere tonight.
They have raised over $500,000 for many different community events, including many AIDS organizations, which is just phenomenal.
How long have they been in existence?
They are 23, I believe, somewhere between 20 and 25.
Because I remember going to bunny parties in the early 80s.
Well, and those were different type of bunny parties, weren't they?
Well, they weren't as successful fundraisers as they are now.
Yes. Well, and that's the incredible thing, how the bunnies have evolved from basically a party to this incredible fundraising mechanism for the community.
And where does that take place? Is it actually on the bayou?
It takes place. It's called Fish Plaza, which is right around where the opera is, Wortham. And they close off part of that, and there is a charge for the event because it all goes to charity. And there's lots of young, pretty boys there. But I feel very comfortable being there too as this, you know, ancient person, because you see a lot of people.
As an old pretty boy, right?
because you see a lot of people that you don't see the rest of the year. It's sort of like, you know, it's like summertime. It's the first day of summer, sort of, in Houston with the bunny party, and it's been very successful. They had a few weather problems the past couple of years, but people still come out to it because it's a great event.
Yeah. Do they hunt Easter eggs?
Well, there are people who have Easter eggs with them. There are people who wear Easter bonnets.
Uh-huh. There are people who are hunting.
Is Dick Cheney going to be there?
Not that kind of hunting.
No.
Well, I get it that there can be all kinds of hunting, but I know it's a fun event and certainly for a worthy cause.
And, you know, as we're talking about volunteers, the bunnies are looking for some volunteers to help them out that day. And if you're interested in volunteering at Pride, you can go to our website, PrideHouston.org, and there's a button there that says volunteers. And also, we are very lucky that we do get a lot of corporate sponsorships to do what we want. We'd like to do for the community, but also there's the ability for people, just general everyday type people to join the Friends of Pride, which is basically people, individual sponsors that help us out, and we really appreciate that. And we have a special wine tasting party for them in June, along with special seating, VIP seating.
Oh, you can just be so special. Yes, isn't that special? Very special.
You've worked the bleachers last
year.
Yes. So I have been very, very fortunate to be able to work with Pride over the many years that I have, and working for them full time now. And we also have a very nice office space at 1415 California, not the club, underneath the club.
That's where you go on for those volunteer sessions.
Right.
And Jack has it really well organized, and he'll put you to work. And we've been talking to Jack Bolinski, the director of Houston Pride, Pride Committee, and the theme this year is
Say It Out Loud.
And so be proud and say it out loud in 2006, and volunteer. Again, the way you can volunteer is to go to the website,
and you can fill out a volunteer application that will get you on our email list, and we call an email to remind you that you did volunteer. And we also want to make sure that everybody is comfortable. I mean, if you don't like to make phone calls, we won't ask you to make phone calls. If you don't like to help at mailers, we won't ask you to do that. But we can find a place for just about anybody. And sometimes people come up with great ideas, and we'll say, okay, go run with them.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the way we learn. That's the way we grow. And thank you for being our guest tonight on Queer Wood, Ms.
Well, thank you. I just hope next time you invite me here, we'll have better chairs.
Yeah. And now we're going to go to the rest of This Way Out.
The gasps of surprise could be heard all over the sports world when pro football player Asara Tuaolo added his name to the very short list of professional male athletes who have publicly come out. Tuaolo is telling his own story in the recently released Alone in the Trenches, My Life as a Gay Man in the NFL. He chatted with This Way Out correspondent Abigail Garner about the pressures of secrecy and the relief of coming out.
By coming out, you shattered a lot of stereotypes about what straight people think of when they think of gay people. But I also think that being a football player, you also shattered stereotypes within the LGBT community. What have been some of the common reactions that LGBT people have had?
You know, it's been incredible. Through my website, I've gotten a lot of emails from fans and support from a lot of our organizations. And it's just a surprise thing. You know, since football is such a homophobic, macho, rough and tough, you know, somebody, you know, people's perspective of a gay person would be like Jack on Will and Grace. But breaking down those walls of stereotypes, it was just incredible to see the feedback that I got from a lot of our GLBT community.
I was struck by how stressful, both physically and emotionally, it is for players in the NFL to stay in the game. Because casual sports fans may look at a player and presume that he's got it made. But constantly there's a struggle going on.
Definitely.
Like survival of the fittest, to avoid injury, not getting bumped off the team.
Well, always, you know, realizing that there's somebody behind you waiting to get your job. But yeah, there's always that competition thing going on, but then the stress level of performing every single week and preparing yourself for a football game so that you don't get booted off and because you're not doing your job. There's a lot of stress involved. And then also being gay kind of just adds another, you know, thing to it, another obstacle. I always tell a lot of when I go and speak that, you know, making the NFL or getting to the NFL is a difficult task, you know, starting from high school to college and then being able to get drafted. But it's harder if you're a gay man because there's so many other stuff that you carry along, the burdens of somebody finding out your secret. And of course, you and I know in today's society, being gay is not a popular thing, and especially being gay in the athletic world.
Talk about the stress of being in the closet. How difficult was that for you while you were playing in the NFL? And what sorts of things did you do to stay in the closet?
You know, many sleepless nights. It got difficult when I got drafted into the NFL because it became corporate. It became a job then. It wasn't like, you know, playing for the love of the game from high school to college. Once I, you know, got into the NFL, it was the limelight, the glamour of the whole thing. And knowing that someone, you know, could come and out you, and you could lose everything that you worked so hard for, everything, every sacrifice I made to get where I was at by just somebody starting a rumor about me being gay or outing me.
Even on your best days, you were worried about being too good for fear that any attention that you might get for your success on the field,
yes,
that it would shine a spotlight on your personal life and people would discover it.
Yes. You know, it was always like somebody watching that I've been with before, and as a gay man, watching a television show and seeing like, oh my, or a game and seeing like, oh my gosh, I know that guy, you know? Because there's a lot of times I didn't in the book. There's a lot of times I didn't tell people my real name. I was always, I had an alias. So it was just so difficult. So for somebody to try to recognize me and you know, the next day, wake up, you know, and see like the headlines, you know, Ezra Tua Olo gay or something like that. It was just really hard for me.
To stay in the closet, then, you had to suppress your
yes.
talent. Do you ever wonder how you would have played differently if you didn't have to worry about that?
You know what? I do now. Yeah, it's so funny now that I'm out and living in my truth and stuff, and I look back into my life from starting from high school and college. I was a great player. I won a lot of awards in high school. I was the best defensive player of the league. I mean, in college, I won the Morris Trophy, which is the best defensive line in the Pac-10. You know, so I look back, and it's difficult to look back now because you never know, you know, what could have been. But, you know, I wouldn't change it for the world. I mean, you know, of course, you know, being in the closet and stuff hindered a lot of things for me. But, you know, maybe I wouldn't be in the position I am in now to, you know, to help people, to inspire, you know, a lot of our younger generation.
You say that your gaydar while you're in the NFL is not well-tuned, and so you really can't tell or can't speak to whether or not there are other players that you met or worked with.
Yeah.
Now, do you kind of wonder sometimes when you see, I don't know, little, I'm not asking you to name names, little times where it may seem as if they're sabotaging their own work?
I don't know. You know, yeah, my gaydar was kind of a little cloudy because I think fear had a lot to do with that. You know, me living in fear all my life, you know, in football. So it was a little cloudy. But now that I look back and I think back and stuff, you know, there are players and stuff that you thought maybe, well, you know, he could be, but, I don't know for sure. You know, he's wearing a mascara mask, so I'm not sure. No, I'm just kidding.
For example,
no. But, you know, it's just, you know, I do look back and I think, oh, I wonder if he was, you know. But then again, I also think, well, if he was, he probably would have contacted me, you know, when I came out. So it's, you know, I also understand their pain and I understand what they're going through, you know. Because it's really not accepted in the sports realm or sports arena, especially with, you know, the good old boy sports of NFL football.
Do you still watch football?
I do. And I got to say, I enjoy it a lot more than I did ever, you know?
Do you anticipate a time when gay NFL players will be able to be out and fully participate in the sport?
I pray and I hope. Seriously, I do. And, you know, because I understand what they're going through. And to be able to be yourself, anyone that knows that, just to be able to be free and of no type of drama or trauma or anything like that, it's incredible. And man, I do pray and hope that someday a gay NFL player will come out while he's still playing, because I think it'd be a huge step for us.
The book is Alone in the Trenches, My Life as a Gay Man in the NFL. The author is Ezra Tua Olo. For This Way Out in Minneapolis, I'm Abigail Garner.
This is Queer Voices.
Humanitarian and infamous Irish patriot Sir Roger Casement was such a controversial figure in his country's history that arguments about his sexual orientation raged for almost 90 years after his death in 1916. But we don't want to get ahead of the story. Casement's fascinating life has been dramatized by writer-producer Hugh Young in The Broken Heart of Ireland, a four-part biography narrated by Barry Empson. Here's part one.
Was on Good Friday morning, all in the month of May, a German ship was signaling beyond out in the bay.
It's the captain again, Casement.
Good day, my son. I've been to the Archbishop, and he says you must first express sorrow for any scandal you may have caused by your acts, public and private. Private. I do not. Then you know that in that case, my son, you cannot be received into the Holy Church, and tomorrow you will die in mortal sin.
Cardinal Bourne is trying to make me betray my soul.
May the Lord have mercy upon you.
Amen.
And so it was that Roger Casement was faithful to us, to those he called our kind, right to the end. For on August the 3rd, 1916, he was hanged. The charge was treason, but what he was hanged for was homosexuality. Roger David Casement was born in Dublin on September the 1st, 1864. His parents were both Catholic, but when he was still small, both his parents died, and he was sent north to his mother's relatives, Ulster Protestants of Scottish stock, in County Antrim. So Roger was raised a Presbyterian and an Ulsterman. From his childhood, he delighted almost everyone who met him. His favourite cousin Gertrude said,
"In appearance, Roddy was strikingly handsome. He was over 6 feet when he was 17. His eyes were grey and deep set, his face rather thin, and his hair nearly black and curly. He had good teeth and a very clear skin."
Fond of painting and inventing stories and writing poetry, he had a beautiful baritone speaking and singing voice, and he was particularly interested in Irish history. His uncle got him a job as a shipping clerk in Liverpool, but he begged a job as a purser on one of their ships to Boma, near the mouth of the Congo, and this led to a lifelong association with Africa. In 1884, he went on an expedition into the African Congo with the Congo International Association. On that expedition, the Congolese called Casement Swami, meaning women's god, and Monafuma, son of a king. Fred Bulliston, an adventurer on the expedition, said,
"He deserved both names, for a more charming, lovable man never lived."
In 1890, Casement met Captain Joseph Korzeniowski, better known as the author Joseph Conrad, and he remembered,
"He is a limpid personality, most intelligent and sympathetic. There is a touch of the conquistador in him, too. I have seen him start off into an unspeakable wilderness, swinging a crook-handled stick for all weapons, and a Luanda boy carrying a bundle for all company. A few months afterwards, I saw him come out again, a little leaner, a little browner, with a stick, dogs, and Luanda boy, and quietly serene as though he had been for a stroll in the park."
The boy was probably a young adult, and may well have contributed to his serenity. The villain of this part of the story is King Leopold. By a lot of clever dealing, he secured the so-called Congo Free State, now Zaire, as his personal property, and the wealth of the Congo Free State was rubber. This was the beginning of the age of the inflatable tire, and countless other uses for the sap of the rubber tree. Leopold had expelled the slave traders, but instead, he allowed his agents to force the Congolese to provide a weekly quota of rubber. If they failed, they were shot down and their hands or feet were cut off and taken as trophies. And Leopold himself was embezzling the profits from the rubber trade. Casement was made British consul in Angola in 1895 and continued to collect information and forward it to the Foreign Office. In 1903, he led a secret mission into the Congo Free State. Meanwhile, he was going on other secret missions. His diary for February the 18th, 1903, reports,
"So enormous, beautiful."
And on his way back to the Congo, he stopped at Madeira, where he met youths like Agostino.
"Kissed many times. Splendid."
Juan.
18 pesetas, 20 years.
And Pepe.
17. Bought cigarettes, much bueno. 16 pesetas.
The first few pages of this diary are missing. We shall learn why toward the end of his life story. Casement's report on the Congo was mucked around with endlessly by the Foreign Office, and Leopold put out countervailing propaganda. But British public opinion swung in behind Casement, and Punch ran a squib.
"The Congo state is a thriving speculation for the happy Belgian nation. The receipts are great and are yearly getting bigger. But I'm glad I'm not an owner in the Congo state."
The British finally sent a commission, and in 1905, a chief showed them how many people had been killed by laying twigs on their table.
"These are for chiefs. These are men. These smaller are for women. And these smallest, these are children."
A total of 110 twigs, and one by one, natives had appeared to show their mutilated arms until the commissioners could stand it no longer. It wasn't plain sailing from then on. The Foreign Office was more concerned with its Belgian relations. But Leopold had to make some reforms. And when he died in 1909, his son made more. For his work, Casement was awarded the CMG. And next time, we'll tell you about Casement in the Amazon.
But no answering signal did come from their lonely banner strand.
Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Charles Hall, Rex Walkner, Graham Underhill, Abigail Garner, and Hugh Young contributed program material. Thanks also to Anne McNally. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen online to This Way Out exclusively on planetout.com. There's also a link at our website, thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded by direct charitable donations from our listeners, and we thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to find out how you can help keep this program on the air and choose from some unique This Way Out queer history, music, and culture CDs that you can own as our thanks. That's thiswayout.org. To sign up for our weekly emailed program information messages and or our monthly This Way Out updates, email tworadio@aol.com. You can also write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening on WHRW, Binghamton, New York, KHEN, Salida, Colorado, 5GFM, Kadena, South Australia, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. We're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Hi, and this is the annual time of the year for the Kindred Spirits Celebration Reunion Dance. And we're talking with Marion Coleman. And let's start at the beginning. Always a very good place to start, as Julie Andrews so...
Kindred spirits. What are you talking about, kindred spirits?
Well, that's when you have two people and their spirits seem to, you know, relate.
Next
to...
question.
Oh,
in this particular interview, what are we talking about, kindred spirits?
Thus, the name Kindred Spirits was the appropriate name and a lovely name for what was a bar. And when did that open?
Well, it was a woman's club, and it opened in February 14, 1980.
And we have Marion Coleman with us here to share this information.
Right, and yes. Marion was the owner-manager?
Owner.
Yes, and it... the original location, which was always my favorite, which was the one that was on Buffalo Speedway.
Right.
And I guess it was partly because in the early 80s is when I was coming out. And so
you were fresh then.
Yeah, and I was fresh before I got stale. Thank you, J.D. And no, but also because there, Cherry Wolf was the DJ there and for part of the time, and she also did a show here on KPFT called Breakthrough with Pokey Anderson. And so a lot of the music from that time I could relate to because she played a variety of music, including
she was
a lot of
very good.
Yeah. People good. Really enjoyed Cherry. And also, you brought in live acts.
Yes.
I remember one Valentine's Day weekend. It was must not have been the 80, but maybe in 83 or 4 when I spent most of the weekend.
Yeah, it was the Women's Festival, and we brought all kinds of Margie Adams, all mm-hmm. kinds of people in.
It's
yeah,
a big name.
That was very nice. So,
and Gail Marie, one of my personal favorites. And then it was really just at that location for a couple of years?
Four and a half years. And then on, we were 4.5 years on Richmond.
Wow.
Richmond and the freeway. So it was 9 years of love and support. And it was.
I remember going there feeling very welcome.
Oh, well, it was really, I called it a woman's alternative, and what that meant was we welcomed men and women. We wanted to share. I think, really, Kindred Spirits was responsible in some ways of bringing more men and women together in the community, and so I'm very proud about that, and that holds still today, because a lot of our celebration, we have a lot of men that come. So it's going to be Saturday, April the 29th, from 8 to 1 at the Hornberger.
What is going to be Saturday? We're honoring the spirit of Kindred Spirits.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yeah, getting together again. People come from all over, from California and Arizona. We have people from Massachusetts, New Jersey, New Mexico, coming in from just to relate to old people.
for those of us who did come out in the early 80s.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And this is called a reunion dance?
Well, we called it Kindred Spirits Reunion when we first began.
Mm-hmm.
And then the committee, which is comprised of 12 women, we decided to call it a celebration because it was really no longer a reunion because this is our fifth year.
Yeah, and so. There were a lot of people who never entered the doors of Kindred
exactly.
Spirits that wanted to come to this event
right.
or had heard of it. It was
right.
the legendary.
Right.
We haven't had a decent women's bar in Houston since. For 5 years, this is the fifth year, so at some point people got together and said, gee, I wish we had something that was kind of like Kindred Spirits.
Well, this is why the reunion and the celebration came about, because I couldn't go anywhere without people saying, please, 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 Marion, open up another club. And, of course, I didn't want to do that. So my partner, Renee Tappy, decided that, well, why don't we have a reunion? And so that it grew from there. And it's benefiting mostly women's programs, our event. It's a fundraiser. Our beneficiaries this year are Sisters, Bearing Support Network, Houston Buyers Club, and the Lesbian Health Initiative. Our DJ, our wonderful DJ, is Terry Flores at Bocardo's. This year, we have something exceptional. My very dearest friend, Michael Kemper, donated a rainbow ring worth $6,000, so we'll be raffling that off that evening.
Now, what kind of raffle is that, where people pay a certain amount to be in the raffle?
They'll buy raffle tickets. The ticket's going to be $1 for one ticket, and 11 tickets for $10, and 55 tickets for $50.
And all the money goes to the charities.
Yes, right. And we also have a wonderful silent auction this year that George Bray is doing from the Bearing Support Network.
How many people might you expect to
Well, we
attend?
Expect around 400. We usually have around 400, yeah. And also, we now have established a website. It's www.kindredspiritshouston.org. And so anyone that wants the information can tune in to that website.
Kindredspiritshouston.org.
Yeah. Right.
Where is the event again?
It's going to be at Edward Hornberger Center at 2151 West Holcomb. It's Saturday, April the 29th.
April
29th. 8 to 1.
Yeah. And tickets are currently being sold, and then I guess also available at the door?
Oh, yes. It's $20 in advance at Acadian Bakers, DeCapo's, House of Coleman, Keys West, and Meteor, and Bocardo's. And it's $25 at the door.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That Hornberger Center, that's a nice facility. I've
and
been
you
there.
Know why I
Two
chose
functions.
That place? It's expensive, but it's a safe place for people to come. We have a huge parking
yeah,
area and parking
great.
Garage. We have 2 security officers.
Well, you know what it is? It's the old ballroom of the Shamrock Hotel.
That's
okay.
Right. Yeah.
That's where it's located. It's, I didn't know that yeah. was the... The yeah. use of it before.
Yeah. And it's an elegant place for people to come, and there's no smoking, and, you know, it's just, it's really, really, really nice. And the people there are so friendly to us, and they really enjoy us. You know, in fact, the people at work, they say, when is the Kindred Spirit Celebration coming? We like that group.
I think yeah. it's the Halloween so magic nice shows work. I've seen there.
Uh-huh. Yes, that's correct. Uh-huh.
Right. Well, I know a lot of people have already bought their tickets.
Yes.
You were at the Lesbian Health Initiative Valentine's Day dance,
right.
and people bought tickets. Gets there,
right.
And so I think almost from when the last one was closing down, people were like thinking about
right.
this year.
Well, we've
so.
Already sold about $6,000 worth of tickets, and we had a kickoff not long ago at Michael Kemper Carfures, and where we raised over $5,000. Tricia Lynn put that together, and the committee worked together. We've got a wonderful committee composed of women. Yeah. Well, every member of our committee works very hard to put this on because they know how important it is, because it's benefiting women's programs, and it's getting us all back together again to see how we're doing and if there's any way that we can help and be a part of their lives again. So it's really a very important event.
What went into making the decision on who the beneficiaries would be? Was
well,
that decided by the committee?
The committee decides. They bring in whoever, and we decide as a committee, and there's 12 of us, and they decide...
Do organizations apply for this? Or
yes, basically they do.
Okay.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And the committee reviews who to pick.
Exactly. And the committee members bring in the benefit factors. They bring them in, and then we talk about it, you know. Like bearing support is basically mostly men. But, you know, Kindred Spirits was always about men and women, so we decided to do that this year.
Yeah, the Bearing Support Network has really grown, and there's more programs and
oh, yes.
things being offered there than before,
exactly.
including youth programs
exactly.
and
yeah.
Just so many things.
It's an amazing organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. And the Houston Buyers Club has been a very important part of our lives, too, because, you know, when women get ill, they still need nutrition and ways to continue getting their health back in order. And so they have a program there, especially for women, so that they can go in and get their nutritional needs and vitamins and minerals. So that's a very important part.
And what does the sisters do?
Well, you know most about that, Deborah. You started,
well,
you're part of that.
I volunteered for a while. I have helped with the sisters and been kind of a cheerleader for them over the years. It's a marvelous group. Tori Williams founded it, and she it came out of her personal experience of knowing a woman who became ill and needed
right.
help, and Tori had worked in the AIDS community and knew the model of the AIDS support care teams, and she took that another step and started saying, you know, there are lesbians out there that have chronic illness or disabilities, or maybe it's they've been in the hospital and they just need some short-term care, but there are women out there with needs, and what better way to serve the community than to do it for ourselves? And that's how that
yeah.
got started.
They basically take them to the doctors, and they do their grocery shopping. If there's any pets that need to be taken care of, they do that. It's just, the women are just so unbelievable, the care that they give to others, and it's a really neat experience.
Yeah, and it might just be an hour or two a week per volunteer, because they do it as a team,
right.
and so that way the client receives the care that they need, the help that they need, and then it's not too much on any one person to take that on. And then
I see LHI on the list too.
LHI.
Lesbian Health Initiative.
Lesbian Health Initiative is also another one of my
yeah.
favorite organizations. Lucy
so.
Watson and Pat Gandy and some other folks have been involved with that. Pokey Anderson was involved with it in the early days. And they do two health fairs a year
right.
that provide testing and screening, including mammograms. And they'll have one in June during Pride Month, and then usually the other one is in October or November.
Right.
And I received a certificate to go to the Rose to receive my mammogram this year, thank goodness the results were fine. But that is so reassuring, because just as we heard earlier in the program, the candidate that's running for U.S. Senate, Barbara Ann Rudnowski, is healthcare is such a big issue, and so many people are uninsured or underinsured. And
it's unbelievable the amount of women that are uninsured. It's frightening to tell you the truth. But LHI, on the Lucy Watson's direction, has just broadened its scope, and it's meant so much to so many women. And they send out a wonderful newsletter telling women about their medical needs and how they can acquire them and go through LHI. It's just a great organization. I'm very proud of our beneficiaries.
Well, I bet you have links to all of them from your site, kindredspiritshouston.org.
Yes, we do. Yes, you can go to that, and you can click on to each one, and it will explain exactly what each organization does. It's a great site, so I hope everybody will tune into that.
You want to recap the who, what, when, what?
Okay, I can do that. It's going to be at the Hornberger on April the 29th from 8 to 1.
Where?
At 2151 West Holcomb.
So it's just off of where Main and Holcomb intersect?
If you go down Main and you'll veer to the right and you'll take a right on Main, and then the very first light, you'll take a left. And the Hornberger is directly on the right. And you can park in the parking garage or into the parking lot, and there's no charge for parking. So, and of course, if you need further information, you can go to our website, www.kindredspiritshouston.org.
And the what is a reunion of kindred spirits?
Celebration of getting back together again, April 29th.
Uh-huh. People that enjoyed it in the past or never got a chance to. And one of my favorite things is that this is a non-smoking event.
Yes.
I guess there's a cash bar.
Yes.
Okay.
You can buy tickets to purchase.
Uh-huh. And then, of course, another one of my favorite things, dancing and music.
By Terry Flores as our DJ with Picardos. And don't forget the Rainbow Ring. It's a $6,000 ring that we're raffling off. Everyone says that. That's going to be
a done deal. The diva wants it.
Yeah, well, you know, Michael Kemper said, I remember when Kindred Spirits had the first blood drive for AIDS victims, and I remember the women at Kindred Spirits being so important.
That was the last time I gave blood, because now I take a medication. I can't give blood anymore, but I remember I went that day. They had some clever name like Blood Sisters, and the idea was that was when the women were coming to the call for the AIDS community.
Right, and
it didn't hurt. That was the only time I've ever been stuck that it didn't hurt. Right.
And he remembered that, and he said, it's about time we started helping women. And with this event, he said, I think this is appropriate. So we owe a lot to Michael Kemper. So if you need a good Barbara Bouffant, women, go to Michael Kemper Coiffures.
And that was an unsolicited and unpaid and not really a commercial in any way.
Right.
Just a thank you for the support of the community, because that's what it's all about.
Right.
The kindred spirit celebration and networking and community and getting to see your friends and have a good time.
Right.
So we thank you so much.
You're very welcome, and I thank you. The committee thanks you, and I thank you for allowing us on the air tonight.
Okay.
And bless you all.
And you're listening to Queer Voices.
Jungle gym. All the boys laughed at him for some sort of speech impediment, and they knocked him down. And I pushed them off, and they kicked our asses, 'cause we
want to thank that last artist, Jen Foster. That was the title track from her latest CD, The Underdogs. And we want to thank our guests,
which includes David Elliott, who called in from Washington, Barbara Ann Ranofsky, who is running for the Senate seat here and in a runoff right now for the Democratic nomination.
And our guest, Jack Belinsky, director of Houston Pride, about 2006 Pride celebration, Say It Out Loud.
And Marion Coleman from Kindred Spirits for their reunion dance on the 29th.
And next week, we'll talk to the Progressive Women's Network, have Phil Mayard from the Alley and the Act Out series. The Unity Banquet folks will be joining us to tell us about that. And Joan has a interview with Varla Jean Muirman about the Ballsy Rugsby benefit.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Networks station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles, and J.D. Doyle's Queer Music Heritage, which is produced in Houston. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Joan Devlin, J.D. Doyle, Glenn Holt, and Jack Valensky. For more information about tonight's program, including links to websites and organizations mentioned during the show, visit queervoices.org. And you can send email to jack@queervoices.org. Be sure to listen to KPFT every Sunday morning starting at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. And don't forget to volunteer for Q Patrol, a nonprofit corporation running citizens' watch patrols in the Montrose to prevent hate crimes. It's fun, safe, and easy to do. Just call 713-528-SAFE.
The free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.